From Maine Public Radio and mainepublic.org, I'm Ari Snyder with the news on This Day in Maine, Friday, November 21st, 2025. Of the nearly 100 schools on the priority list to address aging and deteriorating buildings, only two have been approved in the Department of Education's latest round of state funding. Old Orchard Beach Superintendent John Suddy says 7 years ago, Loringer Memorial School was only one school away from receiving funding and getting taken off the list, and this year it was third on that list.
Two schools ahead of Loringer on the list in, I believe, Bath and Frenchville are both schools that do not exist. They are burned down. So we are the one school left at the top of the list that's actually still open to students.
Chloe Thibault with the Maine Department of Education says the state only approved two projects because that's all they had guaranteed funding for. But as more funding becomes available in the 7-year cycle, she says the state could get to more schools on that list. More than half a dozen medical groups in Maine have issued a joint statement reaffirming the safety of vaccines after the U.S. Centers for Disease Control this week changed its website to promote a debunked link with autism. Maine Medical Association President Dr. Jim Jarvis says decades of rigorous research show that vaccines do not cause autism. He says misinformation is causing increases in preventable diseases because people are rejecting vaccines.
We are now in an unprecedented time where the United States may be taken off of the list that the World Health Organization designates as nations that have eradicated measles.
Jarvis encourages parents who are worried about vaccine safety to discuss their concerns with primary care providers and pediatricians. Last week, the Trump administration unveiled a series of policy changes that state officials say could result in more than 1,000 Mainers becoming homeless. Included are cuts to funding for programs that provide permanent long-term housing and support services. Nicole Ogrisco has been following the story and joins me now to explain what all this means. Hey, Nicole.
Hi, Ari.
So this policy change from the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development includes a number of funding restrictions for states. What are they?
Well, some are in the form of caps. One would limit funding for permanent supportive housing and rapid rehousing programs. Maine currently receives about $22 million for those programs. Now, funding could be cut by two-thirds to about $6 or $7 million. And the state predicts that as a result, about 1,200 people around Maine would lose their long-term housing and risk becoming homeless. What's striking is just how scattered the impacts could be. According to state data, people in more than 100 Maine towns and cities rely on permanent supportive housing vouchers today. This is different from what we know as Section 8. With permanent supportive housing vouchers, recipients not only get rental assistance, they also get support services that are intended to help them stay housed. And providers say they're predominantly older people, veterans, youth, and people with disabilities or chronic health challenges.
Why are these programs being targeted for change?
So the Trump administration says it believes that these programs have perpetuated, quote, never-ending government dependency. It favors spending more resources on short-term transitional shelters and less on government subsidies for longer-term housing. And it believes that the new policy will encourage more personal accountability. But housing and social services providers here in Maine say that permanent supportive housing and rapid rehousing programs have worked for a long time here. The programs are built around the idea that success starts with having a stable place to live, and that only when someone has secure housing can they address the factors that may have allowed them to become homeless in the first place. Chris Bicknell runs the nonprofit New Beginnings in Lewiston, which helps homeless and runaway youth.
People who have a long trauma history and have financial and emotional challenges attached, takes a monumental effort sometimes to acknowledge one's own challenges and make change. And we want people to be able to have that process in the safety of their own home, not on a street corner.
Bicknell says with fewer dollars to help folks stay in housing long term, people will be unable to afford to stay where they are.
Our shelter and our drop-in center will be flooded with 18 through 24-year-olds who are being kicked out of adult permanent supportive housing.
Bicknell says his shelter is already full every day, and Aaron Kelly with the nonprofit Preble Street says people are already spending months or longer inside shelters looking for a permanent place to live. And she says these changes will place more stress on a shelter system that's already stretched to capacity.
Folks will just continue to languish even longer than they are now, which then, of course, would mean for people who are at risk of losing their housing or are likely to become homeless because of these changes, there will be no space in shelters for them to go.
So besides having less federal support for this kind of housing, what else is changing?
Well, the federal government has some new priorities that it's focusing on. Voucher recipients, for example, may be required to undergo substance use treatment. Grants will also be prioritized for states that have a track record of complying with federal law or immigration enforcement, or those that prohibit homeless encampments or have an anti-camping ban. Maine does not have a statewide anti-camping ban. Some individual municipalities do, but all of this means that when the Maine Continuum of Care applies for grant funding on behalf of the state, it may be less competitive. Providers and state officials say they're going to do their best to draft an application so Maine has the best possible chance of securing as much funding as possible. But I will add, Ari, I think there's some hesitancy to say too much about how all of this will be approached, because the announcement from HUD says that it will use information gleaned from public sources, and that includes newspapers and government reports, as possible factors when choosing grants.
And what about the timing of all this?
Well, that's another problem. The Trump administration is not automatically renewing programs that were funded last year. Organizations can't apply for a second year of funding until mid-January. And even if they're approved, they won't receive the money until May. There are programs in Maine that will run dry of their federal support well before May. Social work director Aaron Kelly says Preble Street has two permanent supportive housing programs with funds that expire at the end of February, and that could put voucher holders in a tough spot.
Our shelters are full. There's no guarantee of other housing coming through for those folks. And so it is likely that at least some of those people would be forced onto the streets in March or April, or would be at risk of that.
Can anything be done about this? Is there a world in which these cuts do not happen?
That's unclear. State officials say that there was a failed push to include language to include funding in the bill that reopened the federal government last week. Now there's pressure on members of Congress to include similar language in a future spending bill. In the meantime, Maine Governor Janet Mills says she's conferring with the state's congressional delegation about these policy changes. And Maine Attorney General Aaron Fry is considering legal action, potentially in alliance with attorneys general from other states.
Maine Public host and reporter Nicole Ogrisco. A Portland mother and her three teenage children are in immigration detention in Texas after being detained by border agents in Vermont, according to Portland public school officials and Congresswoman Shelley Pingree's office. While many of the details of the case remain murky, the news has spread rapidly on social media through school, faith, and sports communities in which the Congolese family was active. One of the children, 16-year-old Joelle Andre, is a student at Deering High School and a fixture of Portland's Kennedy Park neighborhood pickup soccer community, says organizer Anthony Fiore.
Yeah, it really sent shockwaves through the KP community.
Fiore says Joelle first arrived on the soccer scene in 2024 and immediately made a strong impression.
I was like, whoa, like this kid's skills are crazy.
Beyond his talent on the field, fellow organizer Mateus Santana says Joel's character has made him one of the most well-liked and respected players in the community.
Every single person that encounters him loves him, wants to be on his team, not just because he's a good player, but because he's a fantastic teammate.
Fiore says he found out the family was in custody after seeing a GoFundMe page this week raising money for their legal fees, but says Joel's friends had noticed him missing from school for about a week.
So they were like looking for him for like a whole week, like very confused. Why is he not in school? Like, what's going on here? Like, he's not one to, you know, skip school like that.
On Friday, a spokesperson for Portland Public Schools said the whole district was devastated by Joelle's detention and that of his sister, Casco Bay High School student Estefania Andre, adding that administrators and mental health professionals have been supporting students and staff. Joelle and Estefania's older sister, Olivia Andre, is also in ICE custody. But a spokesperson for Congresswoman Shelley Pingree's office says ICE was not involved in the initial arrest of the family and that it was Customs and Border Protection that, quote, took custody of the family and transferred them directly to Texas. ICE's online detainee tracker shows the mother, Karine Balenda Mbizi, is currently being held in a family detention facility in Dilley, Texas. Pingree's spokesperson says her office has not been able to confirm that the family is being detained together. Online immigration court records indicate Mbizi was issued a deportation order in February and that her appeal of that case was denied last month. The family's sudden absence is also being felt at their Jehovah's Witnesses congregation.
You know, learning that they were detained was a surprise for me.
Douglas Mpai, an ordained minister, says he helped support the family when they first arrived at the church and that they've been valued members of the congregation.
They are good people and they have a good influence, good friends in the community, and really, really nice people.
Mpai started a GoFundMe that has raised over $27,000 to cover the family's legal fees. ICE, Customs and Border Protection, and the Department of Homeland Security did not immediately respond to requests for comment. Washington County commissioners have voted to accept prepayments on next year's municipal taxes to pay down the county's $8 million debt. Commissioners took the action this week after voters rejected a bond referendum to pay off the debt, which accumulated after poor accounting practices drained the county's reserves. County Manager Renee Gray says it's still unclear what comes next.
So we need to pay as much as we can of that debt so that we can get further negotiation or instruction, or we need to get further direction from the bank on what's going to be allowed.
Under Maine law, counties cannot declare bankruptcy, and adding the entire $8 million amount to next year's budget would represent a 50% increase over last year. Gray says some towns have begun holding public meetings to consider whether to make the early payments. Maine's drought is not expected to end before the winter. That's according to a new 3-month drought forecast from the federal government. That could spell trouble for those whose wells have run dry. That's because once the ground freezes, the amount of moisture in the ground is locked in until it thaws, says Nicholas Stauslis of the U.S. Geological Survey.
If we get a really prolonged cold period where the ground is frozen more than just at the surface, but deep into the soil, it would be harder for even just a little bit of rain to make its way down into the groundwater.
Well, a large snowpack would improve water supplies come spring. It won't do much to lessen the impacts over the winter. Dawn Kristen, known for over 3 decades of activism around the legalization of marijuana in Maine, has died at the age of 72. Kristen founded Maine Vocals, a grassroots organization dedicated to ending marijuana prohibition, in 1989. Catherine Lewis was a friend of Kristen and owner of Kennebec River Cannabis Company.
He was well known for his protests up at the courthouse and getting arrested for smoking on the courthouse steps. And he really encouraged people, you know, to take that step. He wanted legalization, but for medical to help the people that really needed help.
Marijuana is now also legal for recreational use, an industry valued at over $240 million. A 75-year-old woman from Portland has died after she was struck by a vehicle in Portland last night. Portland police say the woman was running with a group that crossed the intersection of Marginal Way and Franklin Street just after 7 p.m. According to multiple witnesses, the group crossed the roadway against the traffic signal when the accident happened. The woman was transported to Maine Medical Center, but this morning police said she succumbed to her injuries. Officials are not identifying her until next of kin are notified. The driver of the vehicle is a 48-year-old man from Portland. Police say no charges have been filed. And that's today's Maine News. For more stories, visit mainepublic.org. Join us tomorrow morning at 8 for Weekend Edition on Maine Public Radio. I'm Ari Snyder. Thanks for listening.